Blog Talk Radio.
This is the Horse Radio Network.
What a beautiful day for horses in the morning.
Good Tuesday morning, everybody. I am Glenda Geek from Lexington, Kentucky.
And I'm Jamie Jennings from Phoenix, Arizona, and you're listening to Horses in the Morning on the Horse Radio Network for February 28th, 2012, episode 347, sponsored by Audible.com. Good morning, Horse World.
Good Tuesday morning to you, and I do mean a good Tuesday morning.
Well, if you insist on being accurate about it.
Only somebody with perfect comedic timing could produce this much energy in one shot.
You gotta learn that your time in the saddle ain't as rough as the life in between. And the fence isn't there for you to straddle. And you can't change horses in the middle of your dream.
Well, good morning, everybody, and I want to give our best to everybody in the northern part of the country up there. And Robert, I know, posted on our Facebook page this morning that they're going to get hammered with snow, and it's like they're getting a major winter storm. I'd like to say in Lexington today, it's supposed to be 65 and beautifully sunny. So, just
rub it in, man. You talk about their terrible weather, and you're like, but here's awesome. We live in awesome.
And Jamie's supposed to be 110 and sunny with a little wind.
with just a wee bit of wind coming through. No, it's actually supposed to be about 65 today. It's just like our one winter day. It's supposed to be 65 today and then like 40, 38 tonight. So blankets on for everybody.
Freeze to death.
I know. Give everybody electrolytes. Cover your tender vegetation because, oh, my God, it's going to freeze.
I stayed up late last night for me. I stayed up to 11:30 watching the Daytona 500. And, I normally not too into racing. We had a nephew who was on the pit crew of the number two car. So we watched that for a number of years just to see our nephew, and I sort of got into racing a little bit. But, boy, they had some excitement last night at the Daytona beside the rain delays for 2 days, and then that accident where the – one car broke and went out of control on a yellow caution flag and hit the back of the jet dryer truck and caused 200 gallons of jet fuel to burst into flames. That was kind of exciting for everybody involved.
I would imagine. Now, you said you're not usually a NASCAR guy. Why were you watching that? Just because of the explosion, or did you see it happen?
Well, no, actually, I was kind of watching. I saw it happen. I was kind of watching, I was working at the same time playing on the computer and, had the TV on kind of thing. That's about the way I can watch racing. I can't sit there and just watch racing. I have to do something, at the same time. Otherwise, it's just, 4 hours of cars going around in circles. But that was kind of exciting last night. And, of course, Danica Patrick, who I won a 3-foot poster to put beside my Carrie Underwood poster in my studio. I have to find one of those. Was racing, and she kind of got wiped out in the first two laps or something. She was in an accident and ended up in the back of the pack. But
really,
the first, she did finish the race though. But they had to do some major repairs on her car. It was the first time I've ever seen a car race like that, where all the drivers during the race, during the red flag where they were fixing the track, were out of the cars, just standing around talking for 2 hours.
Well, when we did finally turn it on, it was like, oh, and Jeff Gordon's over there talking to so-and-so, and he's talking to so-and-so, and they're not on the same teams, and blah, blah. I was like, this is like watching a soap opera unfold, and it's like the enemies are like having conversation over coffee. It was just the weirdest. The announcers were so weird. I've never watched a race before, so didn't really know if it, do drivers not talk to each other if they're not on the same team?
Oh, that was, I think they were kind of making that up. And, you know, it's funny because then it was, you remember I said the day before the announcers had to kill time for 5 hours. Well, they had 2 hours last night during this delay while they're fixing the track to kill time again. And they were down there trying to interview these drivers who were just standing around waiting for the race to restart. And they talked to Dale Jr., Dale Earnhardt Jr., and they said, or he went up to him, and this was very funny, he went up to him and said, are you guys standing around talking about the race? You know, what are you talking about, the race? And he said, oh, no, we haven't been talking about the race at all. And he said, well, can you tell us what you've been talking about? He said, not on TV. So they were not standing around talking about the race.
I'm glad they have a sense of humor about it. I mean, you get a bunch of boys like that together, yeah, they're gonna. There's no way you can discuss on national television what they were talking about. That's funny. The weather. We were talking about the weather.
Yeah. Stopped raining.
Beautiful,
Jennifer,
out right
what's
now.
Coming? Yeah. What's coming up, Jennifer?
On today's Audible.com Tuesday edition, the dynamic duo of the equestrian interweb, that's Glenn and Jamie, will be commenting on the latest equestrian communiques, catching up with Shauna Koresh, and covering the latest happenings with the velvet voice of Horse and Country TV, Victoria Spicer, so stay tuned.
There will be lots of horsies on the show today. My Daily Winnie is a little more serious than usual. We want to send our best to the family and friends of Don Little. He is the founder of Centennial Farms, who own a bunch of racehorses. Actually, they had Belmont Stakes winner Colonel Affair and a couple of others. He was a – we know him because Jennifer rode with him at the Myopia Hunt. He was the master, right, Jennifer, the master?
Yes.
At the Myopia Hunt for how many years? Like
122 years.
Yeah, he's in his 70s, and he still competed in the jumper circuit. He went to Wellington every year. He always went to Wellington and had a habit of getting hurt in one way or another. Well, unfortunately, yesterday he did suffer a fall and had to be medevaced out to the Delray Medical Center. Witnesses said that his horse may have rolled over on him or struck him while attempting to get up. He had serious neck and head injuries, and according to the latest information we have received, he is on life support systems, and it does not look good. But we, you know, we're waiting for further information at this point. So we wish his family and friends are apparently there, and we wish him and the whole contingent down there the best. And Don Little is an institution in the hunting world because he's been master up there at Myopia Hunt Club for a very long time. He's very well known. And Jamie, we got to know him a little bit in the couple of years that we were there. A brave rider, to say the least. So we wish him the best. All right, Jamie, it's your turn.
This Daily Winnie is going to go out to our friend Aubrey Miller because she posted on our Facebook page a picture of a pony that she got on Craigslist. I guess it's a lesson pony. And I am in love with this pony. Okay, from the picture, he's short. He's kind of fat. He's about got no tail. He almost looks like he doesn't have any eyeballs, like at least blind in one. Anyway, she says he's fantastic. It's a face only a mom could love, but he's a very good boy. And then she goes on to post about, you know, how she found him on Craigslist. She said, but we don't find anything as fancy as Jamie has been able to, but this is guys, blah, 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 blah. Like, Aubrey, what fancy horses have I found on Craigslist? I mean, seriously, there's no Craigslist fancy. Like, those two words don't go in the same sentence. So if you can provide me with some examples of fancy on Craigslist, I would love to know. I mean, unless you're being sarcastic.
No, well, what about the last one you just got? The last one was a Craigslist find, wasn't it?
No, oh, he was not a Craigslist find. Maybe that's what she's talking about. No, he was just a word of mouth, kind of like, hey, these people are moving.
Gotcha.
By the horse.
Okay.
So.
Well, this pony of Aubrey's, what the heck color is that?
I think she lives somewhere where the clay is red. So it looks like a POA of some sort. It's a leopard Appaloosa that has been rolling in the, like, Georgia red clay, I guess. I don't know. And I think a goat ate its tail because just like any appies or POAs or any, they never have tails. It just seems to be they just can't grow a tail. So I thought would be my best guess is because it looks pink kind of right now.
His name was Spotty, by the way, and they changed it to Fred. And I wrote on there that, you know, this horse is so homely, he's almost cute. You know, you get beyond really ugly and you're trying to get back to cute at some point. This one's approaching that.
I love this pony. I mean, the uglier a pony is, but ponies are cute related to their behavior. You know, you can have a really gorgeous little pony that's a demon, and it's not cute anymore. But if you have, like, the ugliest, it's like the ugly ones work a lot harder to be, like, good boys, you know?
And I think you just invented a new color, clay leopard.
Clay leopard. I like that. That's what he is. So, anyway.
You need to trademark that, okay, Jamie? Trademark that. Clay leopard. It's all yours.
Yeah, I'm sure that'll work. so just thank you, Aubrey. Keep us up to date on Fred and what he's up to. And if you see another one of those, I am looking for a lesson horse, so send it on over to me. Start checking Phoenix Craigslist. I'm going to start looking at Craigslist now for me. If you can find a pony like that, man, it's awesome.
And you can see the picture of that pony on our Facebook page at Horses in the Morning. Just hop on over there and like us, and you just scroll down a little bit, and you'll see the picture of the clay leopard pony.
Well, you know,
Jamie, you told us that you had something happen yesterday that you wanted to tell us about, but you were holding out. You wouldn't tell us till the show.
Well, you know, it's going to be one of those weeks that all horse people dread, any person dreads. You know, I have a horse here that is, and we've chronicled One Eye Willie from the day we actually found him on Craigslist. He is my one Craigslist find, my 20-something, 25-plus-year-old quarter horse that has one eye. You know, he was skin and bones, and we bought him to be a lesson horse, and we've had him almost 2 years now, and the vet came out the other day because, you know, I just found that he's been really, really grumpy. We quit riding him 4 or 5 months ago because he's just been kind of lame off and on. And he started to get really, really grumpy. And he's, like, mad. I mean, he's, like, mad when he's eating. He's mad when he's turned out. He's not even being super friends with his buddy, the paint horse. And they're kind of, like, best friends in the world. And so I had the vet out to kind of check him out and see what's going on. And apparently he has suffered some major cough and bone rotation. And he's also very lame behind. And excuse me, we've had to decide to put him down. So today's the day. And you know, I mean, I had all the students out last night. Like, everybody loves Will. Everybody loves Will. And he was my husband's first horse that he bought. And we adore this horse. And, you know, he's just in a whole lot of pain. Like, the vet was like, he's in chronic pain. That's why he's been angry for a couple months. And you know, I mean, I knew he was limping around. I didn't know the severity of it. And I just kind of, you know, when it's your horse, you kind of try to look past stuff, but she said that he's losing weight, he's probably not processing his food very well, he's in pain, and he's stressed out. So we had to make the decision, so I have to take him to the clinic today, and we're going to put him down, and it's just an awfully sad thing to do, you know. I mean, I knew he was, I mean, heck, when we got him, I didn't think he was going to make it through the first night, you know, so I don't even have any before pictures. Because I didn't want to take any before pictures just in case he didn't make it. And but to have him 2 years has been a blessing. And, all, you know, all the kids, and it's just been brutal because for the last, you know, yesterday, I had people start coming at 9 a.m. to say goodbye to him, all my students and their parents and their friends and anybody who's ridden Will in the world, and I had to let them all know. So I had to relive everybody saying goodbye and kids crying like 4 different times yesterday. They kind of came in groups, and the last ones didn't leave till 8:30 last night. And it's just been a tough day yesterday and a tough day today. And unfortunately, the week is just going to get tougher. Today is going to be horrible, and today is going to be the worst one. But from a month ago, I found somebody in my eventing community that I know very well and I adore, and it's a woman who does beginner novice, and she's going to lease my warm blood that I've had for 10 years, and she's only going to lease him for a year. Her horse got hurt and needs a year off, and she wants to stay competitive, and I feel bad because my warm blood's not getting the attention that he deserves. So I found this lady. She wanted to lease him, and I said, okay. They have a beautiful facility. They take incredibly good care of their horses. They'll do better than I do with them, and he's going to live at their house and their really nice farm, and they're coming to get him Thursday. So I'm losing two horses this week, I feel, you know. I mean, obviously, my warm blood, Demure, is going to be fine, and I'm going to see him at all the competitions, and she still wants me to drive. They live about an hour away, still wants me to drive out and give her some lessons on him, and, you know, I'm obviously going to stay very connected to him, but still, he's not going to be at my house. And then
right.
Wednesday, it just gets worse, dude. It just gets worse. Wednesday, my friend who... she raised this horse from a weanling, and he had him all the way up. He's 4 years old. She finally started eventing him. She and I have been friends for 10 years. She lives here in Phoenix, and her horse went lame, 4 years old, beautiful warm blood that she bought as a weanling, and she paid a ton of money for him as a weanling, and started jumping him a little bit, just doing cross rails, and he started to get lame. So she's had everything done with this horse that possible and finally got the MRI done, and he's got degenerative OCD lesions in his coffin bones. So basically the horse is crippled now and it won't even be pasture sound at all. Like, he's lamer every day. So she last week decided that, you know, it was time to put him down because he's just getting worse and worse and worse. And she's devastated, and she's putting him down. Well, that's tomorrow. And she can't be there, and she asked me to be there. And as a friend, I have to say yes. So I had to put my horse down today. I had to put her horse down tomorrow. And then I have to release my warm blood to these other people. I'm just, this week, I just want to start drinking right now and just not stop until Friday morning. You know what I mean?
Yeah, no, that's a tough week.
Oh,
that's a tough week.
One of those. So I guess, you know, the best thing to do is just get you know, just kind of focus on today and try to get through today and then deal with tomorrow. But as far as it goes, you know, I have to get done with the show and then I got to go hook up the trailer. And I'm just, like, not looking forward to it, even though, you know, it is absolutely the right thing to do. But, you know,
well,
that is such a hard...
You talked about what I really did for you. You know, you got to look at it the other way, too, and you gave him the last couple of really good years that he wasn't going to have without being at your place.
Yeah, and giving him a couple years where I didn't even think he'd make it through the night is you know, it's definitely a blessing, and I'm really glad we were able to provide that for him. But there's still that awful moment where you have to make a decision. And you always go, what if I could wait? Like, he's not, you know, and then you go, well, what am I going to wait till he can't get up? You know, and then it's, you know, there's no dignity involved in it. It's just, you know, trying to figure out that time that you're going to basically pull the plug. It's just not fair. It's just not fair that we have to do that as horse owners. It just doesn't seem right.
Yeah, but
as animal owners with dogs and whatever.
I have to congratulate you, because sometimes what we tend to do is we tend to wait too long. And when you wait too long, you know, you have to take a look. Are you doing it for yourself or for the, you know, is it for yourself or for the good of the horse? So, you know, and we've made that mistake too with animals in the past, is we've waited too long and we should have done it, you know, 3 months before, because they were in pain. And sometimes we as owners, we overlook what we perceive might be pain because we just don't want to let go. And that's not fair to the animal either. So I want to congratulate you for making the decision and letting go so that he can be out of his pain.
Well, thanks. You know, I've gone too long before, you know.
We all have done that.
All the horses that I've owned throughout my entire life, and this is the second time I've had to make this call. You know, I've had 100 horses. I've had horses since I was 6 years old, and this is the second time I've ever had to make that call. And the last one was a horse that I'd had for 18 years, and he was 28 at the time, you know, and colicking. So it's not, you know, it was an easier decision to make then than this is now. Although he is in pain, and of course, you know, and then my friends are like, and my mom's like, oh, you know, he's going to be running around up there with Marche, and which is my last horse I had to put down. I'm like, oh, he just come tears. He just come because, just tough. So apparently somebody told me to read the Rainbow Bridge, but I haven't been able to bring myself to it. I don't know what that is, but it sounds like it's going to make me cry.
You don't need to read that today.
Okay. Thank you for the advice.
I know you pretty well. I know you pretty well. Not a good thing. I wouldn't read it today. No.
Okay. Enough about me. I thank you for listening, and I know that this is something that all of us have to go through, and you know, any sort of advice anybody wants to post on Facebook, let us just know. You know, thanks for listening. It's helpful to talk about it.
Well, good luck with all of that today. You know, we're our thoughts and prayers are going to be with you and Chad, and that's tough too. You know, I've been in his position too, where we've gotten horses and had to put them down, and it was my real first experience with that years ago when we had to do that. And some horses just, you know, we always say, you know, I was told when we had our last greyhound, you know, when she was getting older, that they'll let you know when it's time, and they do. Animals let you know when it's time. So a couple other things to go on here so we can help you forget about it for another hour anyway. Average Grace is back to work at the down there in New Orleans. He's going to be in the New Orleans Ladies, or she is going to be in the New Orleans Ladies State.
I was going to say, how dare you call Average Grace
I'm sorry. Like I was still. I hadn't transitioned yet. To March 17th at the Fairgrounds Race Course down there, and apparently she was doing her workouts and was the fastest of the 50 horses that morning. So apparently she's going quite well in her workouts, and they're expecting her to do very well in this particular stakes race. And, you know, Havre de Grace has a lifetime earnings so far of $2,400,000 with a record of 8-4-2 with 15 lifetime starts. So she's going to be back coming up here very shortly on March the 17th, and we'll keep you informed about that. And, you know, there's also an award that the jockeys do for each other called the Wolf Award. And it's to honor jockeys. And what makes this award so special is that fellow jockeys vote on this award. So this is by your peers that this award is not voted on. And they just announced who the 63rd winner is going to be. And it's jockey Ramon Dominguez, and he was voted on by his fellow jockeys. And he's based in Santa Anita and also Gulfstream Park. So he won that this year and has done quite well. So we congratulate him. I'm sure he's very – that's an award they all want to get simply because it is voted on by their peers.
Well, and Ramon Dominguez has had an amazing year. You know, he won the Breeders' Cup Juvenile this year with Hanson. I remember that steely gray horse that it can basically led wire to wire. And what's really cool about it is George Wolf, the Wolf Award is named after George Wolf. And George Wolf is the one that rode Seabiscuit when Red Pollard was hurt. You know, you see him in the movies, he's Iceman. So, yeah, George Wolf is one of the coolest jockeys, and he's the one, he actually died at Santa Anita running a galloping horse or in a race. He fell and died. But so it's a true testament to how your peers feel about you. Basically, that just means every other jockey has seen that back end of Ramon Dominguez this year.
Right. Well, and another story here, Haggard's hyperbaric chamber is up and running here in Lexington. After the accident there in Florida, I think everybody but the hyperbaric chamber decided to, you know, take a look and review procedures and things like that. And apparently they have added additional features have been installed in the chamber and through a review of procedures. So they have been enhanced their safety protocols. It doesn't say exactly what protocols they've put in place. I would hope that they're now putting rubber shoes or rubber boots or taking off the shoes before horses go into these chambers, because that's how they determined that that accident happened in Florida, was a shoe getting causing a spark that caused the explosion. So I think everybody with the hyperbaric chamber in the country was looking at their procedures after that happened, and it looks like Haggard is back up and running here in Lexington, Kentucky. So so that's the news from there. There wasn't a whole lot of other news, was there, today?
I've got breaking news. I've got breaking news, and I would like to thank Nancy Clark for pointing this out. Breaking news right now is that Dancing with the Stars Season 14 cast has been announced, and I'm going to give it to you right now. Are you so excited about Dancing with the Stars Season 14 cast? Because I am, especially after reading this. Okay, oh my God. Jennifer, did you ever watch any soap operas, like General Hospital?
I'm embarrassed to say yes, I watched some soap operas, yes.
I didn't know that.
I was trying to hide it from you. I'm sorry. It's my dirty little secret.
Were you a GH-er?
Oh, what was it? I think it was All My Children, I think, that I watched.
Okay. Well, we'll see if that comes up.
You know.
Oh, how dare you. GH was clearly the best show of all time and still is to this day when I do, I'm able to catch it. Now, General Hospital and Melrose Place star Jack Wagner. Wagner's going to be dancing with Anna. Isn't that awesome? Okay, remember Frisco and Felicia? Yeah, 80s, awesome. The next person is, let's see, Melissa Gilbert of Little House on the Prairie.
Oh, is she still around? You don't hear much about Melissa Gilbert.
That's why it's Dancing with the Stars. She was the saddest.
Every B-list actor out there gets a job eventually on Dancing with the Stars. Some C-list.
How dare you, D-list. There are plenty of B-listers as well. that's what's great about the show is you're like, really? They're still around? Green Bay Packers.
Some of them go, really? They're still alive?
Yeah, I know. That happens. Just pay attention. Anyway, Melissa Gilbert is going to be dancing with Maxim. Oh, he's so gorgeous. Green Bay Packers all-time leading receiver, Donald Driver, and he's going to be dancing with Petra. They call this guy the Brad Pitt of Mexico. Telenovela star William Levy, he's going to be dancing with Cheryl. And Sherry Shepherd, The View co-host, she's going to be dancing. Sherry's going to be dancing with Val. Gavin DeGraw, who has a hit right now. I mean, he's actually kind of revamped his pop career. He's a pop rock singer. Gavin DeGraw is going to be dancing with Karina. Welsh opera star Catherine Jenkins. Are you familiar?
No.
Me neither.
I'm not really up on my Welsh opera.
Catherine Jenkins, apparently, who performed on season 12 of DWTS, is going to be dancing with Mark.
Okay, we're going to D-list here, Jamie. They are going to D-list now.
Dude, hold tight. Aren't you a tennis guy? Aren't you a tennis fan?
I like tennis, yes.
Martina Navratilova.
Are you kidding me? Martina's going to be on there?
Going to be dancing with Tony. Oh, my gosh. There's a Disney... I'm just not familiar with the Disney Channel, but Roshan Fagan is going to be dancing with Chelsea. And entertainment journalist Maria Menounos is going to be dancing with Derek. Okay, they're my pick because obviously Derek is the best dancer in the world. And you're going to love this. You're going to love this. Jaleel White is going to be dancing with Kim. Who's Jaleel White, you ask? Urkel.
Yes. Who's Jaleel White?
Urkel.
Really? Okay, you're going down to Z-list now. You're all the way at the end of the alphabet with that one.
Oh, come on. Like, you don't know who, everybody knows who Urkel is. Everybody knows.
Yeah, but
so,
have you heard anything about him since Urkel?
Of course not. Of course not. I'm thrilled. This is going to be an awesome group. Oh, Jack Wagner and Melissa Gilbert of Little House on the Prairie, and then Martina Navratilova and Maria Menounos and Urkel. This is going to be great. So there you go. That's your breaking news for Tuesday. What's today? February 28th, okay? Breaking news. You heard it here first, people. after they announced it on, like, every other website and TV channel in the world. But you heard it here first.
Well, that's great. You know, that's one show. I think we maybe have watched it once, one episode once, but never really got into it. I'm not really a dancer, don't really like dancing all that much, so I guess that's why we never ended up watching it.
Me neither.
There are people like that's... you that are just into dancing.
No, that's the weird part, okay? I don't like dancing at all. I don't care about dancing. I just love this show. My mom and I watch it together, and I don't know why. I just love the show. And between that and The Voice was on last night, I got just my total fix of television. I'm happy. Those are my two reality shows. That's it. You watch Idol. That's your thing.
So, speaking of which, that's on tonight. Now, Nancy Clark says, don't forget Gladys Knight. Is Gladys Knight on that list?
Ooh, I didn't see that name. Oh, see, that's even better. I mean, Gladys Knight? Fantastic. Thank you for reminding me. I must have skipped her.
Wow, that's, see, now there you're getting up to almost B-list now.
The disrespect you have for Miss Knight and her pips, I can't even believe it.
Do you think any of the pips are still alive?
I'm sure. Watch your mouth.
Audible.com is the premier provider of digital audiobooks. I want to thank you, actually. We had several listeners sign up for Audible in the last month. We appreciate that. Audible has over 100,000 titles to choose from in every genre, from thrillers to business to romance, comedy. They probably even have books on D-list dancers. Audible titles like you could play. You can play Audible on your iPhone, on your Kindle, on your Android, or over 500 other devices. You just go to audible.com and you check their list of devices to see if the iPod or MP3 player or whatever you have, you can play it on. You know, we love Audible books. We'll be listening to more Audible books here come on our next trip. We love listening to Audible books on trips because they just make the time go so much faster. But I highly advise you, if you're listening to an Audible book on a trip, listen also to your GPS, because we have went on several trips where we've ended up in the middle of cities like Washington, D.C., because we were paying attention to the book and we weren't paying attention to where we were going. And we ended up, instead of taking the bypass, we ended up, you know, when we started seeing monuments and it looked like we weren't on a highway anymore, we went, oh, crap. So we turned off the book and managed to get out of the city. So be careful about that, because you really do get wrapped up in these books when you listen to them. They have such good readers. They're just terrific. And right now, if you go to audibletrial.com/HRN, that's audibletrial.com/HRN, you can download a free book, and you'll get 14-day trial to give this a try. It's affordable. It's fun. It'll help you while away the time. If you go to a lot of horse shows in the car or the truck, this is perfect for you. audibletrial.com/HRN to download your free audiobook today. Well, Jennifer, you're leading the way, as you always do here with Shauna Koresh. Let's say good morning to Shauna first. Good morning, Shauna.
Well, good morning, everybody.
Hey, are you a Dancing with the Stars fan?
You know, I have watched it, and I'm totally with you guys. I'm not totally a dance person, but it's kind of fascinating. I don't know. The behavior in all the reality shows kind of gets me a little bit, so I watched it a little bit.
Yeah, that's my girl.
That makes you a California girl there, Shauna. Well, let's go to Jennifer and have her lead the way in a conversation about training today.
There we go. Okay, Shauna, I need to know, if you were invited to be on Dancing with the Stars, or you were invited to be on The Survivor, which one would you go on?
Ooh, that's a tough one. I would probably go with Survivor. I think it'd be really hard, though, because those guys are kind of, you know, it gets so much bigger than, I mean, it just, it's almost insidious what they do to each other sometimes. But
well,
it'd be more up my alley.
I think they're meaner. I think they're much meaner.
Yeah,
than Survivor.
It's more manipulative and more, ooh, it's just different. But I don't know, the shoes with Dancing with the Stars, I don't think I could do it.
Well, I got to tell you, Shona, I'd have to go on Survivor just to save the audience from seeing me dancing. I have to do it for the audience.
Yeah, I don't think that'd be pretty on my part either. I'm not really kind of, I'm not a big dancer myself, so I, you know, that would probably be more awkward than climbing a tree for coconuts or something.
Yeah, you'd be out there training your fellow competitors is what you'd be doing.
And the fish to swim into the nets for me.
Yeah. You'd be highly sought after as a member of the team because you'd train the fish to swim into the nets.
I could, and if there are monkeys on that island, I'd be having them really put to work. Maybe building stuff.
You'd have them knitting ball caps for you or something.
And building
training, I'm sorry, I couldn't resist. We're going to chat a little bit today about, and I'm probably going to get this wrong, building duration in a behavior. So you've taught your horse or your husband to do something, but he does it and then expects a reward right away. So I've taught my husband to take the trash out, but he takes the trash out and then he stops and won't do anything else until I reward him for taking the trash out. So
hey, I'm listening here. Just stand.
Put yourself on mute, Glenn. Mute. So explain to me give me an example of a behavior I'm going to teach my horse and when it's time to add add duration to the behavior and how do I go about doing it?
Okay. And, you know, I think of a couple examples. One is an on-the-ground kind of behavior that's specific to target training. That's a stationary target. And then the other one I think of is a more practical mainstream behavior, but something like teaching canter to part. You know, so you first are working on the canter to part, and at first you're just drawing attention to the commitment to the picking up the correct lead when you ask, and then you get that, and you get that solid. And a lot of times what happens with the bridge signal or the clicker, you click and you say, that's exactly what I'm looking for, but all they've done is committed to that, you know, the left lead, let's say. And so as soon as you see that commitment, you click and reinforce. So you've communicated really well, and you've build a reinforcement history with that behavior and association so they think, okay, good. I like when I get that signal. I know what to do. This is what I'm going to do every time. Well, that's all well and good for that portion, but you need to build up now to being regular. You know,
keep
so the
cantering on the left.
Yeah, the actual cantering part of cantering. So, you know, then you put in just if you just go so far, you're going to lose the communication in the early part when they're not so sure that they're doing the right thing. So then you're going to let them go for like a stride, I would typically. I mean, it's a little different for every horse and their own personalities. You know, we have to adapt everything a bit. But typically I might go for just a stride or two next, and then I would click and reinforce and let them know that, yep, even though it wasn't right away, you're still on the right track. So they're kind of knowing, okay, good, I'm still getting it. And then I'd build up to, you know, five strides and then maybe a quarter of the way around the ring and then, you know, halfway around the ring. And then eventually it becomes, you know, and continue on. So you kind of just build it up. And sometimes I still draw attention to that earliest stage when they commit. So you, like this would happen with the whales. If you only bridged or blew the whistle on the fifth bow, the first bow would be kind of low. Second bow would be a little higher. Third a little higher, fourth a little higher, fifth completely up to criteria because they know that's the only one that really, that's the one that, you know, is the breadwinner kind of.
Got it.
So,
okay.
So if you shift it around, they don't necessarily know when it's coming. If it's coming, you know, you kind of generalize that and that helps to keep them motivated, keep them sharp, keep them paying attention. But eventually you want them to be able to just, you ask for a canter to part. They give you a canter to part. There's not an expectation of food. They know what to do. You've taught it through the positive reinforcement, so it has a good association, has a good motivation. And I'll randomly reinforce it at different points in time, but it is not something that I typically reinforce, you know, all the time anymore. And even other people, sometimes when I'm not there and stuff, other people will ride my horses, and they don't do any of the positive reinforcement training, and they're just as good for them as for me because they've been taught with such good association with everything that they enjoy their job as a whole. You know, it's not necessarily about the food anymore. So
okay.
building up the duration is an important part of everything we do. You know, you think about all good training is little tiny steps, little building blocks called successive approximations. And
ooh.
And the, that's a big one, huh?
So
we're really
I have
talking
a question.
Behavior.
So we've established canter depart.
Mm-hmm.
Horse anticipates a reward signal, the clicker, not necessarily
mm-hmm.
the food itself, but the clicker, because so you ask him to canter depart left, and he gets it, and you can kind of feel the horse anticipating, I got that right, I expect to hear that little sound.
Mm-hmm.
That, when the horse develops that connection is when you, so do you randomize the immediate reward, or do you add more strides before the reward? Which one do you do first?
I actually add more strides before the reward. So, you know,
okay.
when you feel that little moment where you feel that, like, ooh, I did it, it's going to happen, I keep really supportive with my aides so that they, you know, if they're kind of, if I'm soft and not kind of really supportive, they may go, oh, good, this is right, this is where I stop and get that. But it,
mm-hmm.
so I kind of make a distinction. If I want to use my clicker and say that's good, I kind of become soft. You know, I don't,
mm-hmm.
I'm not supportive with anything. I mean, I'm still the saddle. I'm not a lump of potatoes up there, you know. But I just, I get just soft and let everything come soft. If
mm-hmm.
I want them to keep going through that, I actually will just be supportive with my aides. Now, this is a thing that not all people, you know, the diehard clicker trainers do, but I do like to, I utilize secondary reinforcements after the bridge signal. So I will, and this is something we did at SeaWorld all the time. So it's something that's widely practiced. It just kind of,
mm-hmm.
through the dog clicker training to horse world, it has,
okay.
it
now
has
before,
become not too much.
Before you go on with that one, you're using
mm-hmm.
a new phone line this time when you're on with this. Hold your phone a little bit further away from you because we're getting a little bit of feedback on our system here. Because it's
okay.
I think this new phone you have is a little more sensitive than the old one you had. Okay, because I want to get every word. I don't want to miss any of it. Okay,
okay.
go ahead.
okay, so then one of the things I will do is I teach them to ride through the click, and this is really important when I'm dealing with, you know, people like BZ Madden and Jane Savoy and Sue Blinks and people that are the higher end riders that they need to be able to communicate that is good, but they're on course or they're in the middle of a test and you want to keep going. So I would I call it riding through the click, and it's not always a click. A lot of times it's a verbal or tactile bridge signal. That maybe is for another show.
mm-hmm.
But the
make a note of that next show, verbal or tactile signal. Got it.
So I will teach them. I may click and want you to keep going. So the kind of the reinforcer for that. After you've really reinforced these signals, they actually become reinforcers unto themselves. They're secondary reinforcers because they've been associated with primary reinforcement for so long. And
mm-hmm.
I only do this when the behavior is really strong and they really have shown, you know, a quickness and a deptitude for it. They're really excited to do that. So and they it's really consistent. But so I start at the walk when I'm going to teach this because it's harder to, if they kind of start to come down and stop, it's harder to maintain that like at the canter or the trot. So I start at the walk where I'm going to be setting them up for success and have the most success. And so then I'll click, and I know that I'm about to click, and I know that they're going to anticipate stopping, and I just kind of give another signal that is, you know, I just get a little stronger with my seat and say, go forward. And as they, you know, feel that hesitation, and as soon as they go, oh, okay, and they walk on, I click and reinforce that. Then I will let them stop because it's the accepting of moving on so that they, you know, they go, oh, okay, that means something. But, you know, so I could draw attention to that moment in time. I can say, that is good. I like what you just did, but we're going to continue to do more. So it's an important way to mark moments in time. Like with, you know, with BZ and Judgment, when she went out to Spruce Meadows to take him when his first time back to doing water jumps, which he had a huge issue with. As she rode by the water, the buzzer hasn't started, but she's out on the course. When she rode by the water and he wasn't bulging and balking and being, you know, afraid of the water, she could click. And this is, she could still use a clicker then. I think you can't now in the class. But she used a clicker. He knickered real soft, you know, and he knew he did a good job, but he continued on and then could do the rest of the course. So she could say, I like what you did there. He went on, then he was fourth, which is a really, it's a huge class. It's a derby up there, big international class. So he did really well. But so that is important in those moments of time when you can say, that was really exceptional, but we're going to keep going. So
that's kind of a being able to judge the horse's level of focus in that he completes the circle, that he recognizes what that auditory signal means. That means you did the behavior right, but he also recognizes that he should continue either with another behavior or further behaviors, because if he keeps hearing it, he's going to eventually get the actual reward and get the treat or the carrot or the cookie or something. So when you're building duration, we've gone over, okay, you are going to do 5 canter strides before you hear the little click noise, or maybe you're going to do 3 canter strides before you hear the little click noise. Do you have any pointers for telltale signs that your horse is ready to make that connection? Telltale signs that when I'm sitting on my horse and I ask for canter left and I immediately click, that I can recognize as somebody who maybe doesn't read a horse's body language and understanding very well. If I do this too soon, if I make the jump of I'm going to ask for longer duration and I do it before the horse has really connected the sound to the skill set, what am I going to see happen if I do it too soon? What's going to go wrong?
Well, the biggest thing, if you do it too soon, you're not going to see a response to the click. So it's really important. I only do this when we're down the road and I know that they're really responsive to clicking. I don't even start really training something new and taking them to unfamiliar territory where they're not going to, where I need a real clear communication. I'm not even going to go to that place till I know that they're responding really well to the click first on the ground. So I want them, when they hear the click, their ears look and their eyes, you know, kind of turn towards you, and that they're responding really well. Like, it's sharp. You know that they know that means something. Then when I take it under saddle, I want to see that same response. So I want to see them stopping. I want them to recognize, and people get this a little confused. They remember the behavior they did when they heard the click. So the stopping is not what's getting reinforced. They remember, and this is the association that's made on the ground first, they remember what earned them the click, because that's when you said you have earned some sort of reward. So it's really important that they're really sharp about that and really clear about that, that they understand what that means. Because if you go on, you're just going to desensitize it. And you want to make sure it has a very high ratio of reinforcement with it, you know, so it means so much, and they know that it's important, and they're very responsive to it. Because if you start to do too many clicks without a primary reinforcement, meaning food behind it or something that they really innately like, it's going to lose its value, and that's certainly not something you want to do. So you're never going to start move into a new behavior until you see them really recognizing it under saddle. And that's basically going to be stopping at first, because that means, oh, I just did it right. I'm going to look and see what sort of reward I'm going to get. So it's and primarily it's going to be food, a primary reinforcement. So you want to see that first. You want to see them sharp and listening. And I'll work on something really simple at first, not the most complicated behavior. I may even take something that they kind of know but maybe could be a little better at, you know, like maybe it's a little bending, you know, and they get a little bit rigid and stiff. And as soon as you feel that little bit of softening. So it's something they know, but you're kind of fine-tuning. So you can recognize it, but you're not going to something that might be frustrating or unknown to them. So that's when I first get under saddle, I do something like that. As I start to feel progress and they're getting softer and softer and softer, and I recognize they realize that the softness is earning the click, and when I click, they stop. Then I feel like, you know, when I've gone through that a little bit, then it's time to move into the duration, and then after you get the behavior really solid, you might move into using a secondary reinforcer as opposed to the food, but continuing on with the riding or the task after the click. Does
okay.
that make sense?
That makes sense. But it's I always have to go out and practice it with the horse because I get it wrong 8 times out of 10.
Uh-huh.
But Beaker is so incredibly food motivated, he is willing to keep trying and trying.
And, you know, that's kind of one of the things that is really, really good. Well, there's a couple of things there you pointed out. One is that, you know, with traditional training, the removal of the aids is what is reinforcer. And the timing on that has to be way more critical than the timing with the positive reinforcement. I think it's a more forgiving system, and you can kind of reshape things if you get it a little bit wrong. Because, I mean, I myself have trained things and thought, oh, I don't like the way that looks. I just want to do it different. You know,
I just
trained
my horse to pick up the wrong lead because my aids were backwards. Yes, I get that, yeah.
So I will, you know, and you can totally go back and do it. And that doesn't mean that the timing is important with positive reinforcement. I just think it's more forgiving, and it is, for me, it's way easier to see, and it's more precise when, with the release of the aids, I think there's a tendency with us humans, especially when you're newer, you know, we're not as in control of all our body parts when we're riding as we'd like to be.
We think we are,
you know?
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah, the hands are maybe doing more than they should, and that's an important communication tool, or our legs are, you know, not as still as they should be. And with the positive reinforcement, with a bridge signal clicker, you have a way to make it really precise. And then another point you touched on, which is huge, I think, is once they start doing this and understanding, it's kind of like a puzzle for them, understanding it, they enjoy the process. So,
he loves nothing more than to try everything he can. He's going, well, if you didn't want me to stand still, you didn't want me to put my head on the ground, and you didn't want me to walk sideways, what else can I try to get that cookie?
and he tries some
random stuff that I never taught him.
and that's really kind of a neat thing because you see so much enthusiasm. They're engaged in the training process. They want to come to the solution as much as you do. And it really is just, in the beginning it seems a little bit slower. In the end it goes so much faster because they're engaged, they're learning, they're trying, and even a young horse will seem very mature behaviorally, you know, and progress-wise because they get so involved in it. And so it's a fun thing to see that they are, you know, really ready to go.
And when we do it with husbands and emptying the trash, I'm going to make darn sure he gets it, that it's not taking the trash bag out of the can that's getting in the reward. It's walking back into the house after it's in the dumpster that's getting in the reward. I'm going to practice
I'm
that.
I'm still here, and I'm waiting for my reward every time I empty the garage, by the way.
So I'm going to work on that for the next 4 weeks until Shauna comes back. And we're going to chit-chat a little bit about, I think it was auditory and tactile bridging and crazy stuff like that. So we're going to see you again next month, Shauna. And thank you so much for helping me out. And Beaker loves it when you stop by because I do a lot more clicker training with him and on-target training with him when you've been here, and he likes it.
Well, that's terrific.
He just likes
the
treat.
He just likes the treat. He doesn't care what he has to do to get them.
That's right. He doesn't care. He just likes the treat.
Get him to take the trash
Thank
out.
You, Shauna.
Thank you.
And by the way, you can find Shauna at ontargettraining.com. Just search for Shauna Koresh or just search for On Target Training, and you'll find her websites right there. And she also has a Facebook page that you'll find as well. Well, today's song is continuing our series that we're taking from Templeton Thompson's new CD, Icy Blue Heart, a little preview for you. And this CD will be available in about a month. She's going to come on the show and let us know when it's available, but we're allowed to give you a little bit of a preview. These are cover songs that she has done. So I'd be interested to see, like last week, our listeners guessed it right away. So I want you to post on Facebook if you know who she covered here, who was the song originally by. And we're going back a ways for this one. Templeton Thompson with Runaway off of her new Icy Blue Heart CD, and we had Glenn Forster with the answer on that one. It was Del Shannon actually wrote that and made it famous, hit the Billboard Top 100 in 1961, and is actually number 466 on the Rolling Stones list of the 500 greatest songs of all time. So that's Runaway by Del Shannon originally.
Wow.
Do you even remember that song, Jamie?
Well, I knew the song, but it sounded so different because I remember going, why, like,
that's right.
I just
that's
remember
exactly being right.
Screechy, and she did it beautifully. Like, she's just got pipes, man. That girl could sing the phone book.
Yeah, she does. She did change it up quite a bit. I actually liked her version almost better than his. So. All right.
Is it weird that every time we play one of these, I just want to be like, yo, dog, you made that your own. You just, you really, you weren't pitchy. You just, like, went out there and you made it your own.
Of course, her husband plays on all of these tracks as well. So when you hear the piano playing or the guitar or whatever in the background, that's her husband doing that. That's Sam. So shout out to Sam as well. Well, our Horse Radio Network show highlight today is the driving radio show came out this morning. We had a lovely chat with David Saunders, who gave us an update on the Little Everglades combined driving event that happened in Florida over last weekend. And we're very excited that a good friend of the Horse Radio Network and the Junior Equestrian of the Year last year for the USEF, Jacob Arnold, won his division in the single horse advanced single horse. And is very excited because they had 19 entries in that division with some of the top names in the country driving, and Jacob won it on a brand new horse in front of him, And it's I posted a video or two of that on our page yesterday. You can check him out going through some of the obstacles there on the marathon course. We also spoke to Jill Ryder, who is the director of the Carriage Association of America. And you'll find out, what did Wendy adopt now? Yes, Wendy adopted another animal because she and Jamie seem to be of the same gene pool. And you'll find out what that is on the show. So the Driving Radio Show, drivingradioshow.com.
Oh, yeah. I forgot to tell you something.
Oh, no.
So apparently Ace Hardware had this huge sale. Anything you could fit into a bag was 20% off. Anything, the big bag sale at Ace Hardware was this past weekend, and I fit 6 chicks into a bag.
Oh, no.
Yeah, we ended up getting 6 baby chickies. They're so cute. I'll have to post some pictures of them later. We haven't taken pictures yet. But even Chad was like, I kind of want them. And all we had to do was buy a heat lamp. And they even gave you free food if you took some home. So we now have 6 baby chicks that are sitting under a heat lamp in the guinea pig turnout.
I can't bust you on that one, because every time we had our big farm and we used to go to the feed store and they had the baby chicks, we'd bring some home. Because you just have to. It's like required.
You can't leave them. Like, you have to. They're so cute. And, oh, I just love them. I love them. Now, the unfortunate part is that my 2 dogs, Boomer and Zenyatta, think that they look delicious. So we're going to have to
lunch.
We're gonna have to keep them separated. Oh, yeah, that's a super fun, delicious toy. Let me have them. Please, let me have them. So we'll have to be careful.
Lunch.
Yeah. Exactly. Hey, do we have Victoria on right now?
Yep, she's ready to go.
All right. Well, you know, Victoria works for Horse and Country TV. And, you know, first time we had her on, we introduced her, we talked about it. Well, Victoria has quickly become one of the most popular people to be on the Horse Radio Network because she absolutely charms the pants off of our audience. So, Victoria, first of all, good morning.
Good morning to you.
People talk about you during the week when you're not here because everybody loves you.
That worries me.
It shouldn't worry you. It shouldn't worry you. They love you. You're very charming. And I think, you know, just to hear you talk, it sends all the male listeners into a tizzy. So that's just the way it is.
Definitely worries me.
Yeah, that part's kind of scary.
It's
but
a
career
story.
And I'm currently intrigued that you have a dog called Zenyatta.
Oh.
I think that's great.
Yeah, guess who in the family got to name that one?
I think it might be you, yes.
Yeah, we got 2 puppies at the same time. Chad named his Boomer and mine is Zenyatta. And that was the way it is, so you couldn't argue with it.
I think
we
it's
call
a brilliant
her
name.
Oh, thank you. Thank you very much. So what's going on over there? How's everything?
Well, it's suddenly into competition season here. I don't know how that happened. One minute it's winter and nothing's happening, and now we've just got all our competitors off doing exciting things, mostly abroad, I have to say. So we're still seeing British riders do very well over in Florida. I think Nick Skelton and Ben Mayer have just had another couple of wins. But very excitingly over here, the eventing season has kicked off, and we had our first big 3-star event of the season, and it was won by Oliver Townend, who's been a very successful rider. He just maybe didn't have the best season in 2011, so hopefully this is 2012 getting off to a flying start for him, and he's got his Olympic qualification, so he must be happy.
Oh my gosh, he qualified for the Olympics. That's fantastic. He's a super nice guy. We've had him on the Eventing Radio Show a lot, and just a really, really charming, nice, kind of down-to-earth guy. So congratulations to him.
Definitely. I mean, I think he's still one of the long shots to be selected for our eventing team, purely because we've just got so many good riders and horses. And as you were saying last week about William Fox Pitt having 9 possible horses to choose from, it's going to be incredibly hard to get that place. And it's strange, because if you'd asked maybe 3 years ago when Ollie was going for the Grand Slam in eventing and he had that awful fall at Kentucky, you know, before then, you'd have thought he'd be a dead cert for this year's Olympics. And now just so many other good riders have come through. And he's got his work cut out, but I think he's done very well to win the first big event of the season.
Well, hopefully he's going to have a good year. If not, he needs to go over to William's place and borrow a horse or two or four or five or six or seven. I mean,
he does indeed. I think they're big competition rivals, so I'm not sure William will be relinquishing any of his rides anytime soon.
They'll be on the team together. They'll be on the team.
might be 10. And the other really good news that happened at Ballindanisk is that Tina Cook got her Olympic qualification on Miners Frolic, who won the European Championships a couple of years ago, and he was silver at the last Olympics individually, and so he's been a brilliant horse, and last year he got terrible colic and they very nearly lost him, so it's really nice to see him back to full health and doing well again.
Now, when you say colic, I mean, what he went through, actually, Miner's Frolic was pretty dramatic. And what I read, like, you know, lost all muscle tone. And to go from that to coming back to be qualified for the Olympic Games is an inspiring story.
Yes, indeed. He had an adverse reaction to antibiotics, and he very nearly lost his life. So just to see him back in full health is just so nice, and he's got so many fans around here. So we're all really happy that he's back to his best, we hope.
Yeah, I mean, tell me you have a story about, I mean, just a whole entire story on from then until now on Miner's Frolic would be awesome. Is it? Can you find something like that on horseandcountry.tv?
I think we covered it when he was fighting for his life, but we haven't done a proper update on him. I think we should catch up with Tina Cook at the next time she's off competing. I think we'll have to do a little video interview with her and find out more about his journey from death's door to being back in the placings.
I mean, that'll be the highest rate. I have goosebumps even thinking about it. So I want some credit. I want producer credit for
okay.
that when you get it done.
Of course.
Now, tell us about Lee Pearson going on. What's Lee Pearson
yes.
got going on?
Lee Pearson's our most successful Paralympic rider ever, and he's done a bit of an interview with us about how he thinks that if the Olympics and Paralympics can't run at the same time, which has been mooted before but tends to always get the no-go because just of the logistics and things. So he's basically suggested that maybe the Paralympics could go in front of the Olympics once in a while so that everybody gets to see the Paralympics first instead of seeing them as a little bit of a... and the Games as a bit of an afterthought. So I think he makes some very good points, and he's such a remarkable competitor, and I think he's got some good points there.
Definitely worth a watch. Now, I just saw that you have Tim Stockdale has been given the all clear to jump again. Catch me up on this story.
Yes, I mean, he broke his neck in a terrible fall last autumn, and he was trying a new horse, which is just one of these things, you know. Professional riders are buying and selling horses all the time, and he got on this horse and had a bad reaction and tore off when he wasn't quite in the saddle, and he fell and fractured 3 vertebrae in his neck. And so it was obviously completely devastating for Tim, who's got some great horses at the moment, and he's been aiming for the Olympics as well next summer. And so, but being Tim, he wasn't going to let that sort of hold him back. And so after a few months on his back in a hospital bed, he got given the go-ahead to start walking around again. And a few short weeks later, he's back on the horse and back jumping. So he still thinks
wow.
he could make London 2012. Talking about fairy stories.
That is an amazing comeback story. That's incredible. Definitely a...
In fact,
I'm going to spend my
Miner's Frolic. That would be the ultimate
fairy tale. Oh my God.
He should borrow more Miner's Frolic, take him show jumping instead of eventing, and there you go, the ultimate fairy story.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, you've given us some inspirational ones today. Tell us about your blog of the week.
Our blog of the week is quite an interesting one. It's by a young up-and-coming show jumper called Anna Edwards, who had produced this horse called Unique right up to the very top level, and she won the Queen Elizabeth Cup at Hickstead in 2010, and the offers started flooding in, bearing in mind it was 2 years before the games and horses like that don't come along very often, and she had to make the decision to sell. So it's a really kind of thought-provoking blog about what it's like for a young rider to have the world at your feet but also have to be thinking about your future and continuing to buy and produce other young horses. And so you should have a read and see what went through her mind when she got these offers for her top horse and why she made the decision to sell him.
Well, you know, it's got to be incredibly tough to make a decision like that and to sell something that has, you've spent that much time with, and just heartbreaking. But you know, to get in the mind of somebody who does it, you know, definitely check it out at horseandcountry.tv. Now, what else do you have going on this week on Sky 280, which is in the UK, and HRTV here is where you can see some horseandcountry.tv stuff too.
Yes, indeed. Well, in the UK, we've got a brand new episode of our regular show, Rudel's Roundup, and I know you guys spoke to presenter Jenny Rudel a few weeks ago. And this time she's been off meeting dressage star Emile Faure, and she also caught up with Monty Roberts during his tour of the UK. And so there's a nice little interview with him. And she went to the International Eventing Forum and caught some of the action and the masterclasses there. And so there's a really good tip-filled masterclass from David O'Connor, so do check it out. And it's available online as well. It'll be put up in the next week or so everybody should keep an eye out for it.
And we definitely will, and that is horseandcountry.tv. Now, a lot of times we have a video of the week. Do you have one of those today?
Yes, indeed. It's an interview with our dressage favourite, Laura Bechtelsheimer, who has she's pretty much guaranteed to get selected for the Olympics unless something unforeseen happens to her top horse. But she's got a brand new Grand Prix ride. So she there's a great interview between Jenny Rudel and Laura Bechtelsheimer talking about this new horse. So do check it out on horseandcountry.tv.
Will do. Well, Victoria Spicer, thank you so much for joining us. We will talk to you again next week. Glenn, do you have anything you want to say to Victoria before I let her go?
No, thank you very much, Victoria. And you know who is one of your biggest fans is Jamie's mom.
Oh, that's lovely. Hello, Jamie's mom.
She called in yesterday, and you have this habit of saying horsies, and everybody in our audience, like, counts the number of horsies you say, and we absolutely love it. It's so cute.
My funny accent, horsies.
I love it. Oh. It was great to see you today. I was going, she didn't say horsies yet. She has to say it at least once, or the audience will be disappointed. And then so thank you very much. We appreciate it.
My
now,
pleasure.
Glenn, I told you not to mention it to her because then she might stop doing it. So don't stop. We love it.
It's a bit of an occupational hazard working on Horse and Country. The sheer rate of horses and mentions there is just going to be high.
Yeah, exactly.
Thank you, Victoria. We love you.
Thank you. See you next week.
Bye-bye. How darn cute can you get?
I know. And again, ladies and gentlemen, she's beautiful. she's got it all.
We got to buy her a darn microphone. You think that at Horse and Country TV they could come up with a microphone for her? We always have this awful connection.
Before we
go today, it's been such a serious show today that I thought I'd liven it up a little bit, or lighten it up a little bit, rather, with the top 20 reasons why horses are not like potato chips. And I got this off of horsenation.com today. What a great little website that is, by the way.
It's awesome.
And I talked to John from Eventing Nation, who started this website last week, about Horse Nation, and I think we're gonna try and do something with them on a regular basis because they come up with some of the most fun stuff. This was written by a girl by the name of Wiley, and she wrote, "Horses are like potato chips. You can't have just one. I just want to take a moment to strongly disagree on so many levels." You know, we've all seen that sign, horses like potato chips, you can't just have one. While I appreciate the reference, I've been known to destroy a whole bag of potato chips in one sitting. I would be perfectly happy to own just one horse. In fact, if you catch me in the right mood, like when I've just received another giant vet bill in the mail, I would gladly trade you one of my horses for a giant bag of potato chips. This is important. I like nacho cheese Doritos. Oh, I do too, but I like the ranch Doritos better. Below, I've outlined a list of reasons why. The top 20 reasons why horses are nothing like potato chips. Number one, you don't have to purchase a truck and trailer to carry potato chips home from the grocery store. Guess it depends on how many potato chips you buy. Number two, potato chips don't require a new set of $100 plus shoes every 6 weeks. That's so true. Number three, storing a bag of potato chips in your cupboard doesn't cost hundreds of dollars each month. Again, it depends on how many potato chips. See, I love potato chips. They're my biggest failing. Jennifer, every time I bring a bag of potato chips home, she goes, it's only going to be here for a day. And I usually make it two.
I'm letting you read this, and I'm going to save my comments till the end.
Okay, number four. Potato chips will go over pretty much any jump you like, provided you give them a good enough toss. Number five, potato chips are salty in a good way. Number six, think about that one. That one takes a lot. It's impossible to fall off a potato chip. Number seven, horses are as breakable as potato chips, but they're way more expensive to fix. Number eight, potato chips will never humiliate you in public. Number nine, when it's freezing cold or blazing hot, you don't have to go outside to eat your potato chip. You don't need thousands of dollars worth of equipment to eat a potato chip. Number 11, potato chips may go straight to your hips, but horses go straight for your wallet. Number 12, you don't need to take lessons to learn how to eat potato chips. That's darn sure. I've been good at that since I was born. Number 13, most people wouldn't take out a second mortgage on their home to invest in a promising young potato chip.
It's a promising young potato chip.
Number 14, problem with the lifespan of potato chips in my house is it's not very long. Number 14, when a horse decides to dip you, it's not going to taste like guacamole. It's pretty good to think about.
Oh, I
if you sit
that.
On a bag of potato chips, did you get it? The horse decides
yeah,
to dip
give me a minute.
Yeah. If you sit on a bag of potato chips, the worst thing that could happen is that it pops. If you spent half as much on a potato chip habit as you do on your horse, you would weigh 500 pounds and people would think you were insane. But see, we own horses and people think we're insane, so that one's kind of even, right?
Yeah.
Number 17, you don't have to dress up like a time traveler from the 17th century England to eat a potato chip. That's pretty good. 18, helmets, safety vests, and medical armbands are currently aren't required for the consumption of potato chips. Number 19, you don't have to sign a liability release before you eat potato chips. Jennifer would like me to, actually, because she says it's going to kill me one day. But number 20, a potato chip will not take over your life completely. I disagree with that one, actually, because I really do love potato chips.
Well,
that's a pretty good list.
That's an awesome list, and I do appreciate the incredible creative mind that wrote that list. However, I wouldn't trade a horse for a potato chip. It's just the way it is. Maybe I'm having just an emotional kind of day, but I would give up potato chips forever to have a horse. So there you go.
You like chips too, don't you? I remember you eating chips when you were here.
I don't eat French fries. I don't eat anything that's crap. I really don't. I don't eat fried food. I don't eat unhealthy stuff. I don't eat, you know, ding dongs or ho hos or I don't eat anything that's bad for me, except for potato chips.
Now is it strictly potato chips?
I don't have a favorite kind. I'm an equal opportunity potato chip eater. They're my weakness. I like the salsa verde Doritos. I like, you know, Pringles. I like sweet and sour, you know, sour cream and onion, barbecue, whatever Lay's. I don't care. Regular plain ones, I mean, obviously I'll eat them, but I'd rather have something with some flair.
Yeah, me too. You know, some of the best chips we had. What is that? Grandma Utz's. Do you kettle cook? Do you like the kettle cooked kind?
Is it a potato chip?
Yes.
Then I like it.
And they're wonderful. Grandma Utz's kettle cooked potato chips. I literally could sit down and eat an entire bag, and I think I have on many occasions. Unfortunately for my middle.
All right, I've got to get up here and go eat some fruit and yogurt and lose some weight. Just talking about this potato chips. And, of course, I'm going to stop and get some potato chips on my way out the door. Ugh, thank you very much. I've even tried to eat.
I give you permission to eat as many potato chips over the next couple of days as you want.
Aw, thank you. That and beer is going to be my staple diet for
perfect
the next
combination.
Couple of days. Yeah,
well,
exactly.
Good luck today. We're all going to be thinking and praying for you and thinking good thoughts for you through your day, you and Chad and the whole gang there at Flyover Farm.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And I appreciate it. It's just one of those things you got to get through. But love everybody for the support. And, you know, go give Will a breakfast of champions. Whatever he wants to eat, he gets this morning. He got like 4 pounds of alfalfa pellets last night soaked in water. He just thought it was like the greatest thing. He had a whole big giant bucket full of Equine Senior, a whole big giant bucket full of alfalfa, and he just couldn't decide which one he wanted to eat. He's taking a bite of the and then a bite of the alfalfa, and then a bite of the pellets, and then a bite of the alfalfa. He's like, there's so much, and it's all right here at the same time. So I'm going to give him a nice special breakfast this morning, and I'll give him a big carrot from everybody in Horse Radio Network world. So thank you very much.
All right. Take care, Jamie.
All right.